Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts, in a way that encourages all to think for themselves, so the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, your host, ably assisted today by co-host Daniel Garner, and of course, Mr. Tech Man himself, Bernard Hankins. Today, our guests, I'm going to let you hear from them directly, but they are engineer graduates of University of Virginia, graduating in 2012, meeting each other for the first time their first year, and they are true entrepreneurs. They have their own business now called Elegant Solutions, and Michael Michon and Ardish.
Amish here. quite as far from Amish as yeah. that, actually. I was using a computer.
This is going to be a fun show. This is not nerds. These are hysterical people. And we're going to let Ardish say his own last name for us.
Ramakrishnan.
Okay, so he is an Amish after all, but nothing against the Amish. Anyway, Marcello Rolando here as well. And let's start right out. Elegant Solutions, what is that, Michael?
So it's a product development company, and what that means is people come to us with ideas or problems, so we help solve them, those problems, help them fix that. That can be anything from a website, app development, or small products, which Otters and I majored in mechanical engineering, so that's kind of our sweet spot. That's what we like to do. That's our passion. But we found that a lot of the contracts and ideas nowadays are more on the digital side, so out of necessity, we've kind of focused a little bit more on that in the past.
But Ardish, you also do physical products as well.
Tell
us about that.
So as Mike said, we're both mechanical engineers, and as a result, we learned all the skills that you need to kind of take an idea and then develop it as a physical product. And we basically bring those skills and allow our clients to kind of tap into that. So once we have the idea, we break it down and then we kind of sketch it out, figure out what it should look like, and then figure out what processes we can put this concept through in order to get an end solution that's a physical, tangible product.
All right. So how do you market yourselves? It seems like I've seen your website, and anyone would want to look like that, but how do you market yourselves to get the clients to come to you? How does that work?
Well, we started going online, like as just friends and family, really. That's how you start anything, and then as you build that reputation as being someone knowledgeable in that field, just more and more people want to come to you and ask.
So word of mouth is still reigning.
For sure.
Still your best sales lead.
Especially at our size too. We're a small company, so we're not going to deal with some of the big players that you normally see if you want a very professional, like corporate setting type of job. So we get a lot of those entrepreneurs, a lot of the people with ideas coming to us. So.
Okay, everybody thinks they know what an entrepreneur is, or the definition of entrepreneurship. Ardish, tell us what it is. Tell us what you think now that you clearly are one.
Well, I would say entrepreneurship is less of a profession and more of a concept that is adding value to your surroundings. When somebody is in an entrepreneurial mindset, they're constantly looking around them and saying, what's wrong with the world? What's wrong with my surroundings? But not just stopping there and complaining. They're also saying, how can I make this better?
Fantastic. And I wish I wish we're all entrepreneurs in that sense. Tell me, that makes me slide right into politics, because seeing what's wrong and then trying to fix it, and not just complaining about it. So what is the current economy, how is that affecting a, shall we say, a small startup?
Well, in terms of direct economic effects, we're not at a scale where we're feeling very much. I mean, we've got clients coming in. I guess less people are willing to spend money on ideas. They need more validation before they're willing to pull the trigger. So we do see a little bit longer of a lead time. But for the most part, entrepreneurially minded individuals are still looking to have their ideas brought to fruition. So we've really not seen a direct effect as a result of the economy. If anything, more people are saying, "Hey, I just got laid off. Let me go try this idea. Let me build this product."
Yeah. I think there is a little bit of a gap when you're talking about the VC and venture capital and getting funding for an idea. There is a little bit of a missing point between funding. There's seed funding, which is normally like 50 to 100,000, and then there's this middle stage, which is $1 million to $2 million. And there's a lot of ideas that are getting out there that are get that seed money, but the step between seed to that middle stage to a bigger level when you're getting a lot of money invested, there's a lot of VCs who are investing a ton of money, like over $5 million, but that gap to get from seed to that middle stage, there's people missing kind of filling that role.
And that's actually given rise to things like Kickstarter, crowdfunding, these kind of concepts. But I would go ahead and say that gap is existent from the seed to the mezzanine stage of funding. But the seed funding is as bright as ever because people are looking for smart ways to invest their money. And after 08, people are a little bit more worried about how they're going to invest, and they want more personal investments that have a little bit more control over.
Exactly. So they're not trusting the big old boys and who got us here, but rather looking for people like yourselves and looking for a place where they can invest. As you say, they have a hands-on kind of approach. And I guess necessity is the mother of invention or whatever. Yeah, because if you lose your job and your livelihood and nobody's going to hire you, as many people know, it's kind of what happened to me in when I went to New York. Initially, I didn't have a job. I had done a lot of professional directing, some big houses, including the Kennedy Center. But when I got to New York, nobody says, "Oh, we're so glad to see you. Step right in and direct this Broadway show." And what I found in reading the trades was that there were many playwrights who had scripts out there who couldn't get produced. So I started contacting them and then started directing and producing it, and that's how my company got started. I hadn't thought of that in years, so we have something in common.
There you go.
But
if you ever want to produce one of my screenplays,
there you go.
I actually
is it really? Seriously?
It does.
Oh,
it
man,
does.
We got to talk. Well, anyway, speaking of talking, back to the two of you. We have Elegant Solutions Entrepreneurs here, and we're going to now... sequester, none of that is directly affecting you, but you see people coming to you, or people, whether they come to you or not, are choosing an option if you're suddenly unemployed. Now, see, I've been a freelancer most of my life, so with the economy, and not that I'm immune to the changes, I've had to sell off real estate and all that stuff, but I mean, but I hear what you're saying, that people, and I love that, if Americans are going, "Whoa, what just hit us in 2008, and then instead of going hiding in a corner somewhere and feeling depressed or whatever, going to say, "Well, now what can I do on my own?" How does that fit, this individualism? How do you harness that?
Well, when a client approaches us, I mean, the idea or concept that they're bringing is a form of individual expression. It's them saying, "This is something that I believe is going to add value," and solely by the act of acting on an idea that they believe that it's going to add value, they are saying, "We stand behind this. We want to express ourselves in this way." But so far, most of our clients have not necessarily been unemployed or affected by a sequester or in between jobs or anything like that. It's just an overall trend that we've noticed because as much as we are service providers, we also have to be industry watchers.
Sure.
Our clients don't want us to build something that's already out there. And a byproduct of kind of being an industry watcher is you follow what's happening in other startups and other cities, stuff like that. And what we've noticed is a lot of people who had high-powered positions within a corporate structure are taking the experiential knowledge that they gained there and then applying it to an idea that solves a problem or adds value at a point that only they could have seen within that corporate structure.
Absolutely. And so what I'm trying to say to everyone is a reasonable voice politically. We the middle class has been redefined, and those who are out looking for jobs are not the people traditionally that we think are looking for jobs, but a whole different set of people. And like you say, if a corporate guy lost his job, he's been operating at a certain level. Tell me this word that you introduced me to today that you tell me has been around for a while, ideation?
And yeah, that's correct.
What is ideation? First of all, let's spell it. ID.
Don't ask me to spell it.
IDEATION.
Speaking as a four-time spelling bee regional finalist, IDEATION.
Yes,
yeah.
And it's pronounced ideation, which I learned today myself. But tell us, what is ideation?
Essentially, it's the development cycle, taking an idea from one stage to the next, to the next, to the next, until it's a product. So the way we do that within Elegant Solutions is by looking at the requirements of the product that you want to get, the technical requirements that are going to limit us to get there, the timeline, the budget, all these types of factors that are going to influence our decisions throughout that process. So it pretty much consulting is another word that is thrown around with
mm-hmm.
ideation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ideation is more.
Ideation consultants. You'll see that in a lot of places.
Yes. Oh, wow. So it sounds so 21st century to me, but I guess ideas have been around for a long time, and few of us can see them sometimes and seize on them. But let's get an example here so people understand. You know, everything starts with an idea.
Right.
But how do you turn that idea in, how do you two turn that idea into a product, digitally or physically?
So it's a lot of back and forth. I mean, I serve as the project manager, and Mike and I, you know, it's a two-man outfit. Plus, we have a couple of other freelancers that we work with. So really, there's not strict boundaries. But typically, when a client comes to us, the first thing that we do is break down what they're telling us into objectives and constraints. And this really helps us focus our design without losing touch with what are our limitations. So focus our design on the client's vision, but keep it based in reality is another way to say that. And then the ideation process really begins where, like Mike said, we take multiple factors, you know, the time, the cost, the audience, all of these different things, and then try and find a solution that fits all of this. Something that is optimized for all of these factors that the client has said is important to them. And then we actually start brainstorming, creating concepts, come up with something, see what else is out there. Because, you know, one of our mentors once told me that there is no such thing as an original idea, just an idea that's going to be done better than what came before it.
Yes, I agree.
So we're not looking to knock anyone off, but what we're not looking to do is reinvent the wheel.
I think another key component of that is looking at the client, is what we bring to the table as
exactly.
The entrepreneurial side is that we're looking to solve a client's need, what they need. And some design people just design with pure design in mind. But as engineers, we have this idea, okay, it has to be functional. It has to solve a pain point.
Yes. Yes.
So with that in mind, that's kind of the underpinning of everything that you're going on, that's going on within the ideation process.
So you're a pragmatist.
Yeah, creative pragmatist.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. If you must
word.
Slap a label.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I'm just thinking as someone who graduated a few years before you, it's not that I, and I guess I've done this too, certainly as a director and as a writer, developing an idea, but it still is a concept. I'm speaking, I think, for most of the people. To have an idea and then to say, okay, where do I go? This, you know, you think of the guys of old in their garage trying to build a different kind of peanut butter machine or something.
Build Google?
Exactly. And there certainly are giants in the 21st century, especially in the internet world, which is the world. There are giants that have started in basements and garages and
And I think you certainly fit into that category. You're on that same train, yes?
College apartments?
Yeah. So when you brainstorm, it's a duet as opposed to more people? You said you had some freelancers.
Yeah, well, I think the good part about a mechanical degree is that we don't specialize in anything, but we know a lot of the subsets in each type of engineering.
Gotcha.
So we have a good sense of where to look for the information. So he and I aren't experts. We wouldn't call ourselves experts at anything, but we know who to talk to get the information, to get the right answers, to get a product or an idea moving along in the right direction.
Wow.
And technically, we're not experts, but where we do excel, where we are a cut above the rest, is our ability to take everything that we see, everything that we're finding through our research, all these concepts that we were introduced to through our schooling, and then apply them in a novel way. It's that second order thinking that we really bring to the table and our clients love.
The more we talk, the more I feel like we have in common, and I certainly don't do physically or digitally what you do. But we'll be right back. We're going to take a brief pause, commercial, to hear from our spoken word poet, Bernard Hankins. Stay with us.
Our culture is speeding up. Multimedia, web clips, megabits, megabytes, websites, and CD rips. Streams of thought stream through viral video. An update to Norton antivirus is critical. The path of these pathogens is through wires that are digital. If we did a blood screen of our bloodstream, we'd see plasma. TV screens, the scan would come back clean like a vaccine because we paint pretty pictures in pixels and projection. PowerPoint post-production and color correction. Blu-rays, green screens, red cameras, and movie scenes on the silver screen. We connect from coast to coast with wall posts, proxy ghosts, and web hosts. Embed with threads, test programs in beta, save data on a SATA drive that's hard. P2P, PS3, Nintendo DS, and P2 cards, hard drive disk, HDD to store video in HD, Y2K, RSS, CSS, and CS3, cascading styles, XML files, XM satellite, and flash MX, modem modular. Demodulate, codec, compress, decompress. Files are stored, they're big in gigs and megs, iTunes, M-Audio, M, and JPEG.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. Our guests today are graduates, mechanical engineer graduates from University of Virginia. And as we were going off, there was something that Adish said that made me think of... I know I mentioned the theater and video and all that a couple of times, but this idea that that people can come to someone with their idea, but they don't necessarily know what to do with it. And in that sense, I certainly have done that with a lot of writers, playwrights, theater primarily, but also screenwriters, TV, teleplays, etc. And somebody comes to you and they have this great idea. And first of all, they've had it. It all starts with a blank page, with a blank page. But it's an idea, and somehow you turn that into a product, which I assume they then market and sell and make money from. Am I getting the arc? I mean, it's the same arc as always. As you say, you didn't reinvent the system. But, oh, I know what it was. Here it is, you made me think of, Adish. It's that when I first started my career in directing, then people would bring to me Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. West Side Story is in a different class on by itself, but Oklahoma and Brigadoon and Sound of Music, and, you know, I directed so many of those over and over, but the way I did it was, I'm not doing it the way it was always done, Guys and Dolls. It's a different approach. It's going to be something novel about it, and that's what hit the chord. And I'm saying all of this because I think there are a lot of people out there that might hear mechanical engineer, I can't do what they can do. Well, maybe we can't, but we can be our own entrepreneurs. We can have ideas, and if we can't develop them, then we can find these guys. Speaking of finding you at Elegant Solutions, how do we find you? How do people come to you with their ideas? Website, tell us how to get a hold of you.
Our biggest presence is our website. We have our contact information on there. It's elegantsolutionsdesign.com. Besides that, it's been a lot of word of mouth to date, and that helps us kind of control our bandwidth and make sure that we have enough time to go around for all of our clients.
Fantastic. So I'm going to ask my co-host today, Daniel Garner, if he You want to jump in with a question?
Thank you, Marcello. Gentlemen, why did you choose to become entrepreneurs instead of workers?
Well,
saying I don't work.
Yeah. Well, what are you
That's
saying
it.
About
that? That's it. Employee. Why did you choose to go the entrepreneurial route? Because often entrepreneurs are accused of wanting to put off reality, unfortunately. There can be some negative connotations that come with that.
I would think we both have very different reasons. Mike, what did you?
I love working with you.
Some romance right there.
Two, I like the idea of having, like, being my own boss and being able to do what I want and being to be able to work on the projects that I think are important. And I think taking this step towards entrepreneurship is, you know, the first stage to do that, where I can be kind of be my own man in that respect.
Well, for me, it kind of stemmed from a very similar place. I've always liked creating, and I realized that the path to creation through a standard kind of entry-level job and then moving up through the ranks was a lot slower and would erode against my creativity and my free thinking, which may or may not be true. I will never know because I didn't test that hypothesis. But instead, I went the freelance route. And also, another big motivation for me was I've always, you know, I grew up as an only child. I've always had a large emphasis on my friends. I've gotten very close to my friends, and they really are some of the main things that keep me going in terms of everything. You know, I really enjoy that. So I wanted a job that would allow me to keep in touch with my friends and spend as much time as I can with the people that I care about, my parents, my friends, my family, all of that. So I felt that entrepreneurship was a great way to do that. You know, I can call mom at 11 in the morning if I need to. I can, you know, if one of my friends needs me to be in Richmond, I'm there in an hour, you know. Same with D.C.,
right.
2 hours.
I think there's a book called, I think it's The 4-Hour Work Week.
Yes.
Two things that they emphasize in that is time and mobility, and this type of lifestyle affords us that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, how have you as entrepreneurs, because one of the great challenges is having the capital by which to sustain one's businesses and one's work as they move on the track of developing their businesses. How have you been able to give yourself that space to realize these opportunities? Because I think that is something a lot of entrepreneurs or a lot of people with entrepreneurial ideas struggle with, trying to figure out the way to strategize so they can have the space by which to realize their vision.
So one concept that we always tell our clients when they come in is an idea is not an invention, and an invention is not a product.
Yes.
In the same way, you know, a lot of people have the motivation, but there will never be enough capital until you tell yourself, I'm going to make do with what I have. And that's what Mike and I did. We started Elegant Solutions really on prize money from an entrepreneurship cup. Where we came in third. We put the project together. We put the project together 15 hours before the competition, and maybe had as many beers as hours prior to the competition. And that really set the tone for how we proceeded in terms of capital. Because you know, you can't do anything without money. But
you can't wait for the big...
You cannot wait. You cannot rely on anyone else. So we really went out with the mentality of sell or die. This is a phrase one of our good friends kind of told us. You know, sell or die. You're going to either go out there and take your idea and turn it into an invention and then sell that and then hope that it's a product. In our case, our invention was our service, our novel approach to the realm of product development. Or it's going to fail. Right. And that's what we did through our fourth year. You know, as we were finishing up our schooling, we worked to validate the fact that this will work as a company.
So you were, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you were working on the idea of working together as entrepreneurs with your own creation of digitalizing or physically producing an idea. This was something that started formulating as soon as you met at UVA through your...
Far from it.
Okay. I was going to say, because, I shouldn't say it sounds like this came later, because I don't know, but was it after you graduated that you sort of solidified this idea to work together, or...? What?
Well, it started in our third year, and it only became after we graduated, it really became real. And to add on to Adarsh's point before, I think the thing that I thought was important between on why I chose to do this was that it allows you the time. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm lost my train of thought.
Well, it's a time to live too.
I think this is kind of getting on this conversation that Mike and I always are having, which is now is the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're young.
Oh, right,
we're
the fear
and do it anyway.
And we've been lucky enough to have been afforded the time to do this right
now.
Gentlemen, when it comes to entrepreneurship, do you think there's any other way to do it other than jump out the window and learn to fly on the way down?
Well, everyone is going to have a different experience there, Daniel. I mean, you know, some people come in with significant capital and significant industry knowledge, and then they make their idea happen, and it works. Some people come in with nothing, and then they get lucky.
Mm.
You know, some people are somewhere in between. You know, we came in with a little bit, with enough resources to get us started.
Mm-hmm.
We had great degrees under our belt, and we took that and applied it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say one way is right or one way is wrong. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think there's different ways to approach it. I mean, there's someone who could work 4 hours a week and get enough money just through that, managing projects, and work on their own stuff in their own time. I think our process has been a little bit of both. We've done a lot of the service side at the beginning, where it's been mostly other people's work that we're doing for them.
Right.
And now we're starting to get into the space where we're splitting that time between other people's work and stuff that we want to do.
And I think the lesson here is that, as you said, and even Napoleon Hill said, it's not a new idea, but you've taken it and run with it nonetheless, and that is you start where you are.
Yes.
You don't wait until, oh, of one of these days when, or if this happens, or when that happens. You start where you are, and you work toward what you want. And you guys are doing that, and obviously the word of mouth is getting around. Daniel.
Yeah, I heard a really wonderful entrepreneur speaker. Can't remember his name, but he said that there's three really important questions. The first two, I believe, you've already answered. And the three questions are, who are you? What do you have? Why should I care? So let's pretend I'm a client, and I ask you the first two, and you've answered those, and I say, okay, why should I care? What would you tell me?
Well, if you cared enough to seek us out and find us and convince us that you were worth our time, I mean, then that's part of the reason why you should care, because there's a mutual feeling process with any work in the creative space.
Mm-hmm.
And if a client comes to us with an idea and they first approach us, that's where within 10 seconds of reading an idea, we can tell, is this something where we can add value?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If so, then we meet further. If not, we have references, we have other people in our network that will say they might be better to help you. So why should you care? Because you're sitting in front of us.
Yes.
Well, what if you come to me then? If you come to me and you're trying to get my idea, what would you say to convince me that you're the ones?
Well, if we've vetted you and we've found that, you know, you have an idea that's something we can add value to, chances are we're not coming in just saying, let's explore this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be coming in with, here is exactly how we can help you, and here is exactly what we can do, and this is how we would do it. Would you say that's about right, Mike?
Yeah, I would say we'd have the expertise to get you on the quickest, most value-added path to your end goal, which is a product, or whatever that is, whatever that may be for you.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's a mutual interview in any case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
I mean, we're interviewing you guys right now.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. And I'm interviewing you, too.
Absolutely.
And I don't just mean on for the radio. But I want to expand the ripple that you are creating. I mean, this is a time where some people will run scared. It says, I tell my friends, you know, it's not the time to sell devalued real estate. It's time to buy it. It's a time you can be, oh my God, this is terrible, or you can be, oh my God, look what we can do. You guys obviously are the latter. You are doing this. What's your advice for people of any age? It isn't necessary that it's just the 20-something, of any age. How do you advise people to to come through, to laugh their way through, to work their way through, to earn their way through, to create their way through a time that the media is constantly trying to make us think is impossible to accomplish anything. Like they get help from the politicians, but I mean, the media is full of that message. What do you tell people to besides turn off your television?
Well, for one thing, we're not really counselors. We've never been through that kind of a conundrum, a real pickle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a good situation, and we're very cognizant of it, but we've never been through it. We can't really advise people. I think
maybe the reason for that is because we're so passionate about what we do, and
yeah.
It makes it a lot easier to go to work every day and be like, yeah, I like what I'm doing,
yeah.
It's great.
Exactly.
See, that's another message from the past, too, that is do what you love and the money will follow. I can't remember what the woman's name of the book, she had a series of books, but do what you love and the money will follow. And that's,
yeah.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead, Mike.
No, that's pretty much my point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't have too much to add to that.
I mean, you know, creating your way out of this, all these different things. We can say those concepts, we can say these
mm-hmm.
these phrases, but at the end of the day, we don't know the circumstances of the
yeah.
person that's going through that. I mean, Mike and I are very fortunate. We're
yeah.
young, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're just coming out of college. I mean, we're both debt free now.
Mm-hmm.
We're
that,
both, you know,
that helps.
We're doing our own thing. We're able to live comfortably. We don't have anyone counting on us. We don't have responsibilities. I mean, thank God both
mm-hmm.
of our parents are in good health, you know,
mm-hmm.
all of our families are doing well. So it's very, very, very different than, you know, somebody who's got a young wife and kid at home
mm-hmm.
or something like that. So I in no way would feel comfortable giving any advice
mm-hmm.
to them, you know, other than if they came to me and asked for professional advice
mm-hmm.
on a product design.
Sure, sure. But I have to say, you are reminding me, both by what you do and what you say, that Americans do tend to bounce back.
Absolutely.
And there is proof of not only of entrepreneurship, but people out of necessity perhaps now changing careers, you know, in the second half of their life. They're going out and getting
second act.
Another, exactly,
yeah.
It's a second act. They're going out to get degrees and things and learn a whole different set of skills, and they're doing it. And I know, of course, a lot of people like yourselves, I'm certainly not in your age range, but I've been very blessed and fortunate and been a freelancer, as I say, all my life. And if I ever took a job, it was teaching because I chose to do that for a temporary period of time. But I'm also impressed with anyone who can be knocked down, as we have sort of been economically, and then instead of whining about it, get up, okay, now what do I do? And then doing it. And then making, I mean, Daniel's like that. Bernard's like that. There are a lot of people I know, and I guess I just hadn't thought about it much lately. But as you talk to us today, I think that's the spirit that you have, and that's the spirit that's out there.
Well, I think that's an American spirit.
Yes.
That's kind
yeah.
of what this the idea of this country was founded on.
Yes.
In
yeah.
the beginning, it's a place to start afresh.
Yeah.
And I think that falls in well with
And we still country. Have it, and we need it, and... I'm glad to be reminded of that fact. Okay, another question, or how are we doing on time? We're probably ready for another. Let's take another break right now, and we're going to say goodbye to our guests, Michael Michon and Arish
Ramakrishnan.
Ramakrishnan.
Yep.
I got it that time.
There
finally,
you go.
Entrepreneurs. Elegant Solution. Give that website one more time, please.
ElegantSolutionsDesign.com.
There you go. That's easy to remember. Visit it and be in touch with your great idea. We'll be right back with our panel discussion this week. Don't go away.
I'm looking out my windows at the vistas and views. Watch online what I missed on the news. TiVo TV shows. I see the street below and watch people go. Guys with cool cars. Searching for meaning in engines like toolbars. The city's glaring light. Building across, the girl decides what she'll wear tonight. Thinking she'd be happier if she could just lose a few extra terabytes. Like signals searching for wireless. Human beings seeking is tireless. We're so connected, but so disconnected. I'm introspective, so I sit and reflect this. 6 degrees of separation, caught in webs and internets. We all just want someone to remember us and never forget our username. While life counts down in hours, minutes, seconds, and frames, life is short, and we all die soon. And time is mean, so in the meantime, YouTube, while I tune videographers, digital photographers, professional and amateur. We click on media of Wikipedia and not books of Britannica. Log and blog on a PC. Politics are PC. IBM. FAT32 is my hard drive. BMI. Netscape. Celebrity sex tapes. TMZ. Information technology, or just TMI.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. And now we're joined with, by our panelists, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo for O.G. Rose, and our poet in residence with the spoken word, Mr. Bernard Hankins, and your host, Marcello Rolando. We are now, we've just had a great interview with two entrepreneurs and who I felt made an excellent point of how do we respond to our current financial situation, the change in the economy, the coming back slowly. How do we respond? Do we just complain? Do we run and hide? Do we give up? Or do we do like the two gentlemen we just spoke with who seized the day, grabbed the moment, started wherever you are with whatever money you have, and do something new with your life? And so here we are. We're going to talk about that. And Daniel, why don't you start us off?
Well, the first thing I would say, it's great to have a chance to listen to two savvy business visionary individuals to come in. And I think it's very much needed in America today to have more entrepreneurs. We've been very reliant on a growing financial sector for many, many years now, that we all refer to as too big to fail, unfortunately, with the banks. And manufacturing and entrepreneurship are the prime ways that wealth are created, entrepreneurship being the taking of an idea and realizing it. And luckily, there's a growing interest in entrepreneurship. We see that in Austin, Texas. We see that in Charlottesville. We see that in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And certainly hope that that continues to be the case. And I think it's very good that more and more of America is waking up to that entrepreneurial spirit, because that is the defining spirit of America. This is the place that people come to do new things. And the more and more that happens, the more and more we all benefit.
Yeah, I think, in terms of entrepreneurship in America, what's so beautiful about it to me is the fact that it embraces taking risks and realizes that taking risks is important and is actually imperative to doing something that matters, that truly makes a difference. And certainly there are things that people do that matter that, you know, may not involve such a high level of risk that entrepreneurship involves, but take even love. You know, in our interpersonal relationships, love is risky. Anything that is really challenging and is really important is going to involve risk. And I think that sometimes we have sacrificed risk for the means of, you know, stability, and I can understand why, but that has unfortunately had some ramifications that are negative for our, you know, current economy and for the way we even think about jobs and employment.
Yeah, for me, the two topics that always come up are the ones of identity and creativity, and I'll give you a story that relates to both. First, identity, and I think there's an importance of how we see ourselves, and so I heard this story about, it was Zig Ziglar. I think it's a true story, but even if it's not, it's a great, you know, anecdote. So it was a homeless guy, had a cup of pencils, said, "Pencils a dollar." Zig Ziglar walked by, started to take the pencil, came back and said, "Wait," you know, he dropped a dollar in, like, you know, everybody else just dropped a dollar in, but Zig Ziglar came back and said, "Actually, I want my pencil." He said, "You're a businessman, much like myself, so I want my product." Mm-hmm. So then he said, like, you know, 3 months later, somebody approached him and said, "Well, you probably don't remember me, and I don't know who you were, but 3 months ago, you bought something from me, and you called me a businessman. Now I see myself as a businessman."
Yeah.
So I think it's about seeing yourself as what you want it to be is important. And then the second story is Ford, Henry Ford. Some woman came to him and asked for some money, and he graciously dug into his pocket and pulled out a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said thanks. She took that nickel, she invested in peanut seeds, mm-hmm. and planted the peanut seeds in the school that she was working with the children. They all planted the seeds over and over, and they came back. They were able to raise money for the school to buy a piano. Mm-hmm. He was so impressed that he gave her, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And,
sure.
And to this day, they continue to donate to her school.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of seeing what you want to see and being creative to me is very important, and not just accepting, well, this is the way things have to be.
Well, that's excellent, and I'm a Zig Ziglar fan. I taught how to deal with negativity and rejection in New York City to New York actors that was based a lot on Ziglar and an update of Napoleon Hill and all those guys. And Bernard's absolutely right, and those stories are true. I wonder if we here, even at the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, should explain our identity. We ought to be able to define ourselves to you if you have questions. The four of us, debate with one another regularly about what we are trying to do, who are we, and why you should care. Dan, you want to take a stab at that?
Well, like I mentioned during the interview, there's three great questions to always ask. Who are you? What do you do? And why should other people care? I think we are the Reasonable Voice. We are interested in educating the people about political issues, of which involve everything, whether it be the finances, whether it be art, whether it be society, whether it be history, because we all live in society. Now, the state and the society are distinct, but the state is the organizing principle of the society, so we're all involved in politics. So it's important that we have a reasonable voice about those things so that we can understand the world we live in. And what we offer is an education to the people listening about how better to understand the world we live in. And to the question of why should people care, we do not believe that the world exists in a vacuum, that the economic, there is no, you cannot separate economics from literature, from fill in the blank. They're all in the world all the time, like a watercolor painting. And it's only by addressing that, all the issues, totality, that you're actually addressing the world we live in. I've heard it said that economists talk about economic models, not the economy. And I think very often politicians talk about politics, not the country they represent. And in a way, it's natural to think singularly. It's very hard to think of the big picture and to see how it all connects and that it all goes together. But I think it's only by exploring how it's all one, how it all goes together, and doing so here, particularly through a political lens, gives us a better understanding of the world we live in and how to best live in the world.
Yeah, I think something distinct about the four of us really is that we share something in common, which is, seeking, we seek to learn truth and we seek to learn more about the world around us. But we all do come from distinct backgrounds. Daniel grew up on a farm, our friend Bernard is a spoken word poet and also is involved in hip hop. Marcello, you've had experiences in New York City, and I'm an immigrant, really, to the country from South Africa. And I think there are these very unique environmental, we've had these upbringings that are distinct, and yet we have this one thing in common, which is to really seek out, more about, the country we live in, really, now at this point. And I was thinking about what you said, Daniel, about all these different, you're saying how it's hard to understand all of the complexity, and it's sometimes hard to take those things into account. But I think that's the whole idea of that. That reminds me of entrepreneurship, really, because it's easier to sort of see things, in terms of black and white, and this is the set way of thinking about the world around us, or thinking about politics, or thinking about literature, and we can get into this idea that we have to keep things in these different camps. Entrepreneurship, I think, tries to bridge those camps a lot of times, which does entail risks, because you have to recognize that you don't know things. And I think that's with the four of us, we recognize that we don't know things, and there's a lot more to learn, but that's why we're still seeking it out. And I think that's what I love so much about the entrepreneur, is that drive to be okay with stepping out into the unknowns, but realizing that there's a lot that we can actually access and then use to build and make a better world.
Yeah, you brought up what I wanted to talk about, actually, and the word Daniel said, which was explore. Listening to the interview, someone made the comment that, there's no new ideas. And I think that's a popular idea out there now, that there's never anything new. And I personally don't like to think that way. I understand what people are saying, but I think once you get into that mentality, then you start to settle for what is right there. So I'm a big fan of discovery and exploration, You know, one of my favorite scenes is from A Beautiful Mind, where John Nash is like, I want to come up with an original idea that no one has ever else came up with before. You know, everybody laughed at him because like Michelle said, it's easy to settle for what is put in front of you. And that makes me think of cynicism. And, you know, an attitude that I see a lot in the business world particularly is like when you bring ideas, a lot of business people, they immediately say, well, there's something out there like that already, or that's not going to work. Because it's easy to be cynical because you don't have to do anything. You just shut it down. You say, okay, we're done. But when you want to find a new idea, you have to take the time to say, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe there is something out there that I didn't know about. Maybe I have to be humble for a moment and see what somebody else has to say and figure out that, oh, guess what? There is actually something new out there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think, you know, I certainly have heard, just because I've lived longer, I guess, the idea that there are no new ideas, just new ways of approaching them, which, of course, is what our guests meant and most people. But I take Bernard's point, and it reminds me of something that I've said to the three of them in the room here, but I want to make certain everyone else knows. It's my philosophy that we have to connect the dots. We need to connect all of the dots. There's a total picture here. It is past, present, and future. What is past is prologue unless we know and research and explore, understand, and then take a different path. The old thing, whether it was Napoleon Hill or Zig Ziglar or someone, if you keep baking the cake the same way and expecting a different result, well, you know. So, this panel that I have chosen, I chose because, first of all of us are creative artists and open-minded, but I also chose, which I may not have said to them, because each of them knows a lot about the things that I don't know about. So I have multiplied my knowledge just by being in the same room, studio with them, and having a panel discussion. And I think out of our interview today with entrepreneurs and out of our examining our own identity and definition as the Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, we are also saying, okay, we are who we are because we are each other's experiences and we are extended by each other's friends, family, contacts, life. And that is what the Reasonable Voice is about, is understanding that need for that connection.
Oh, and to the point, a lot of the really great entrepreneurs come from humanities, from the arts, because they have a creative way of thinking. They get pegged up with a computer programmer, feed them the ideas, and they've created a great product. So they need both. The founder of Abracadabra, which is behind Skype and a lot of the truly great programs out there today, didn't know a line of code, but he had the creative thinking because he studied what otherwise would be seen as not necessary for business in computer coding, found some programmers, and has changed the world. China just recently had their first science fiction convention because for years they've been looking at their scientists who are in manufacturers who are great at making other people's stuff, and they've been wondering, why in the world can't we come up with new solutions? Well, because they don't have a science fiction convention. That sounds ridiculous, but it is the case. That's what the Chinese government figured out. They said, we need a science fiction convention. And it's that exploring of different fields of knowledge that gives rise to new solutions that if we don't do, we're just going to keep doing what we've done all along. And so if that works with the entrepreneur, then it works in politics. And that makes sense because humans are holistic. No one is a quote-unquote scientist. They're a dad, scientist, churchgoer, et cetera, et cetera. No one is a typology, I suppose. And more we embrace that right brain thinking, I suppose, in a Daniel Pink sense, that synthetic thinking, the more and more we'll find solutions rather than just have arguments.
And this relates to something Michelle said and what was discussed in the interview, the idea that an entrepreneur has a negative connotation, which nowadays I think is not as it used to be.
No,
it has a much more positive one now because you're a go-getter. But I just remember recently watching a TV show where they were making fun of a character in the movie, and they said, oh, Bob, yeah, he's an entrepreneur. Like, you know, he's always got these ideas, but he never does anything. And I think this relates to what Michelle's talking about with the risk. because there's this interesting, I always talk about these thresholds, these kind of invisible lines that happen that we don't see. So if you connect this to the idea of, you know, in our country, people tell you, you know, become successful, become wealthy. But there's also a disdain for wealthy people. Mm-hmm. But if you're a wealthy person, there's no let me backtrack. There's this attitude that if you're down here looking up, then you can have disdain. But once you reach that plateau, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, you know, welcome to the club. So the same thing happens with entrepreneurs. It's like you're not proven until you're successful. You're just an idea haver who's got all these things and you're unfocused. But then when you make Google, they're like, oh, Google, you're such a great person. Yeah.
Or Amos Cookies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the trick. I mean, that's, you know, and I talk about this subject a lot, you know, here with my friends in this room. And, you know, this whole idea that, you know, you're a crazy person until, you know, you found Apple, you know, and Steve Jobs. I mean, and it's just like, it's interesting because we know these things and we hear these things and yet we still are afraid. I mean, I think honestly it does boil down. A lot of actually, I think, you know, broken human conditions is because of fear. You know, it's that fear of stepping out into the unknown, as I mentioned before.
I mean, to your point, I think there are a lot of social pressures against the entrepreneur. I think when America was full of immigrants who are coming across the ocean to do new things, that it was more accepted. But now, because stability for about 100 years has become pivotal, those who go against it are in error. And if some economists, who I think are correct, like Minsky or Steve King, who talk about that the stability of capitalism ultimately destabilizes, because when there are good times, people make speculative bets and then it all goes crazy, well, then there is no such thing as stability, and actually falling into that creates problems.
Okay, we're going to have to cut out only because we've run out of time, but this discussion is going to continue. This is what the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio is about, discussions like this. We will be seeing you again or talking to you again next week. This is the Reasonable Voices in the studio with me today, our technical support creative catalyst and the spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to all your friends. This has been The Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping you'll become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.
No strings attached, no looking back. A new man is what you looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough raps. And where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddled. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle. So they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise a debt ceiling.
Hey. Oh. Hey.